Okay, good evening, everyone. So let's do this. We are on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. That is 21A. And again, I thank you for that. I didn't realize there was a conflict. Not to say I think we could really change the time this year anyway, but I appreciate you being here to learn Torah together. So we are on, again, Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. That's 21A toward the top. It's the second wide line. I imagine it's still in the first page on the art scroll. What you're looking for are the words v'chayiv al harosh, and one is liable on the head. So that's a statement from the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, it said that there is pa'as harosh. There's two pa'os for the rosh over here and over here. And if I shave them, I am liable. I get malchus for that. So how does one know where the payas are? Now, here we're hoping that the Gemara is actually going to delineate for us where the payas are. But I guess the Gemara wanted to leave room for the Rishonim and Achronim to debate this for centuries. So, therefore, what's it tell us? Mechavi Rav Sheshet ben Pirkei Reisha. Rav Sheshet pointed where the bones connect on the head. That's where the payas are. Which is somewhat helpful, but not particularly to the details that we need. You know, what bones was he looking at in particular? Where did the bones join that he was referring to? So it's helpful for the people who are in Rav Sheshes's shear when he pointed to his head and showed you where. If you were in that shear, you'd be able to see. It's not so helpful for us who are reading the Gemara because it doesn't give us the details that we are looking for. But that's what we got. So
I'm
you can
going to
always
go back and get it.
we'll have to go back in time, right? Get a DeLorean. Let's go back in time and find out.
Right.
Okay.
I have an English phone book.
Oh,
Phone
yeah.
booth.
What was that, Zadie?
I have an English phone booth. I can time travel.
Oh, that's Doctor Who. Okay, very good.
Yes.
Very good. I got that. Okay. So similar thing again. As far as shaving the edges of the beard, Vazogon, there's two on this side. Again, just roughly like here, here, and then here, here, and then at the center, which is the tip of the beard, Vachasmelmata, and one below. That's like around the chinny chin chin. So again, Rosheshes pointed out where the different points of one's beard meet and where we compartmentalize, where we categorize that. Once again, it's not so helpful because we don't get to see it ourselves. So once again, due to this ambiguity, I gave the Rishonim what to debate. Great. Now this, one last quick thing, and then we're going to get to a very essential piece of Gemara when it comes to shaving. Rabbi Lazar Omer im Nutlan. Now, it doesn't give us the full quote, but again, what it says in the Mishnah is that if you shave off, right? Let's say you take a razor or you shave it very thin, depending what you hold like. You take out all of both sides of your payas in one fell swoop, vas achas. So, Quin Rabbi Eliezer, unlike the Chachamim, unlike the Tanakhama that won't be chayiv twice, once for each side, Rabbi Eliezer says you're only chayiv once. Why? Kesavar chad lavu, Rabbi Eliezer says it's really just one lav. It's a lav of shaving pa'as roshecha, of pa'as rosh, of the payas. And so if you do it as one maisa, one fell swoop, you only get one punishment for that. That's what Rabbi Eliezer holds, unlike the Tanakhama of the Mishnah. Okay. Now this Gemara, obviously, I always encourage that you walk away remembering everything we learn. But if there's one thing you remember from today. This is a very important Gemara. So remember last time we were talking about shavers and razors, and we have all these questions about, okay, I know that as a man, I'm not allowed to use a razor to shave my beard, but what about shavers? And is there a difference between different kinds of shavers? What about scissors? What about something that gives a close shave? So I'm going to read the Gemara for you, and then I'll tell you in addition to what the Gemara doesn't tell us and what we need to fill in with the Achronim. So the Gemara goes as follows, right? How do we even get this distinction between a shaver and a razor to begin with? What even might be the distinction? So here we go. Remember, the Tana Kama, the normative opinion of the Mishnah, is that you are only liable, you're only accountable once you use a razor to cut the hair off your beard. Anything short of a razor, you would not be chayef on. Where do we get this from? Tana Rabbanan. Upa'atz zekanam lo yigalechu. So we're going to have, the Gemara doesn't actually tell us explicitly, you have to look at Rashi, he explains. What we're going to have is a gezeira shava. So for those who have the psukim on the side of your Gemara in the Torah or Hashalim, take a look at Dalid and Hay. So we have one quote from Vayikra Chaf Alev Hay, that's Leviticus 21:5, and from Vayikra Yud Tes Chav Zayin, Leviticus 19:27. The significance of these two psukim is that the first one pertains to Kohanim. The second statement, the second pasuk, pertains to Yisrael, to Jews in general, not to Kohanim. And so we're going to actually derive different qualifications from each pasuk. And therefore, if you notice, you look at each pasuk, the first one says, Lo yikrachu karcha barosham upa'as zekanam. It uses the word pa'as, the edge of one's beard. And in the context, in the next pasuk of Yisrael, it says, Lo sakipu pe'as roshchem, the edge of your head. So what we have here is the word pa'as, pe al suf, appears in both psukim. So what we do is we create a gezeira shava between the laws of Kohanim and the laws of Yisraelim. So anything I would infer from one pasuk, automatically that din applies to the people we're discussing in the other pasuk. Effectively, there's no difference between a typical Jew and a Kohen for these laws. That's what the Gezeira Shava teaches us. Now, with that in mind, so when it says, Upa'asikanam lo yigalechu, you shall not shave the edge of your beard, I would think maybe, who said just a razor? Maybe even just scissors. If I use scissors to trim my beard, I should be chai for that. Tamalomar, that's why you have to read the pasuk more closely. What does it say? It says, losashchis. It says, losashchis es pa'asa konecho. Do not destroy the edge of your beard. Ah. What does it mean, don't destroy? Well, scissors don't destroy the hair, right? It doesn't get deep in over there. It's just like it's a cursory trim. That's what scissors accomplish generally. Whereas a razor puts pressure on the face and manages to give you a close shave by doing so. So that's what we derive from the word of losashchis. Any kind of cutting that's not destructive would not be problematic. Ilo sashkis, yachol, and let's say all I had was the pasuk said lo sashkis, yachol in lakt malaki rehitni yehechayim. I would think to say that if I used a tweezer or a plane, I use these other instruments, either a tweezer plucking out the hair, which is not cutting, it's plucking it out. So it accomplishes the same thing as a razor to a certain degree. You wind up taking the hair out completely, but that's not called shaving it. Therefore, Tamalomar lo yigalechu, it says in the other pasuk, the first pasuk, lo yigalechu, you shall not shave your hair. Ah, paketzat, so now what are we left with? When one requires, in order to be chayiv then, is two things. It has to be a giluach, shaving. So isn't shaving that excludes something like tweezers or implements that are not generally used for shaving hair. And sheyesh bo hashkasa. It has to have the desired effect of basically eliminating and destroying any hair that is on one's face. What has both qualities? It's considered shaving and has hashchasa is destructive. Haviomer zetar, that knocks out the tweezers, it knocks out scissors. All that leaves me with is a razor, which is both destructive and a form of shaving. That's how we get to a shaver, sorry, to a razor from the Gemara. And what that leaves us with the question is, what about a shaver? You see, a shaver, when we think about it, for halakhic purposes, it probably accomplishes more or less the same thing as a razor, particularly the way certain shavers work. I can't say I've been eyeing that far into it. Actually, when I was at the Shiva home for Rav Tendler, I met Rav Shabtai Rappaport there. And I actually should have asked him more about it, because Rav Shabtai Rappaport, Rav Tendler's son-in-law, was very famous for a number of things. One in particular, he's always quoted when we talk about shavers, because what he did was, he says, when you talk about something like a lift and cut shaver, you can't just trust the marketing. You can't just look at how they market a product. What he did was, he actually got a hold of the patent for the product and saw literally how it works. If you want to actually understand how a product works, you have to look at the patent. You have to really research it and understand the metzias, just like Rav Tendler would say. And so I believe he determined that many of these shavers that claim to, you know, completely annihilate and destroy the hair and get rid of it aren't doing necessarily what the marketing claims. But a question that comes up, by the way, is, well, what makes scissors different than a razor fundamentally? So one could say it is the way scissors function, that a razor is one blade with pressure on the skin versus scissors, which are two blades. So the question is how you understand a shaver. See, a shaver, the way I think it, I understand it functions, is one blade breaks it into the screen, and then another blade chops it off. Ah, maybe that resembles more a razor, because it's one blade chopping it off. That's what some say we're a mach. But generally we assume the main distinction of sugya is between the maisa versus the tutsa, an action versus the result. If we're viewing a shaver through its result, it yields more or less the same result as a razor. However, if we're looking at the maisa, a shaver has two blades, and since it has a two-blade action, which resembles much closer to scissors, even though it gives a closer shave than scissors would, more similar to a tar, to a razor, nonetheless, it would be mutter according to those opinions. So there are some people who like to dull their shaver so it doesn't have the same effect as a razor. But nonetheless, there are those who paskin that virtually all shavers are okay because we view them based on how they function, not on the result that they yield. So there's more to the sugya, but that's the general rundown of it. Okay, let me just, you know what? We're only a few lines from the end of the Gemara to the Mishnah. So why don't we just get to the Mishnah and then I'll pause and I'll take any questions. Okay. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afilu lot b'malakid or hitni chayim. Now, everything we just said only works according to the Tana Kama. Rabbi Eliezer came along and he said, no, even if you use something like tweezers or a plane, you're still going to be chayim for it. Ay, manafshah, from what is thy soul? I always like saying that. E gamer gezeira shava libay tar. If Rabbi Eliezer, right, so what's the Imanam Shach? Imanam Shach is
either, either way.
I mean, that's literally what it means, but yeah, I'll translate what it actually.
No, what it literally
means. From what is your soul? I mean, that's, but I'll explain what Imanam Shach means, really. What Imanam Shach means is either way you slice it, it doesn't make sense. In other words,
they translated, what is your desire?
What is your desire? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But basically, like, what are you saying? You know, like, what are you saying? Either way you slice it, your position doesn't make sense. Why? Why is this position difficult to understand? Because if he accepts the Gezeirah Shavah we just made, he should be led to the same conclusion that we had, that anything that's not a razor would not be problematic for shaving one's beard. And Elo Gummer Gezer Shava, and if he doesn't accept this Gezer Shava connecting Yisraelim and Kohanim, then Misparayim Namilo, then even scissors should be problematic, I believe, for Kohanim. Right, because it says Losashkis only in the context of Yisrael. We used, in the context of Yisraelim, it said Losashkis, do not destroy the beard. We said, since it says don't destroy, scissors are okay because they're not destructive. But we only know that in the context of Yisraelim. So if I accept the Gezer Shava that connects the Pasuk of Yisraelim to Kohanim, then the same way Yisraelim are allowed to use scissors because it's not destructive, same thing for Kohanim. But nonetheless, if Rabbi Eliezer rejects this Gezer Shava, then according to him, Kohanim should not be allowed to even use scissors. Yet, even Rabbi Eliezer doesn't go that far. So, Mimanavshak, what is he? What's he doing over here? So the answer is La'olam Gamer Gezer Shava. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer accepts the Gezer Shava. Whatever laws and exceptions apply to Yisrael apply to Kohanim, and vice versa. But, you know, it's almost like a very anticlimactic teretz. It's almost like an argument of Mitzvah. It's like a, what they call derisively in yeshivas of Balbatish teretz. What he just says is that using tweezers, using planes, using these things are considered shaving. They are used for grooming purposes. They are used for shaving purposes, and therefore he puts in the same category as a razor. But he does accept the shava, and therefore he accepts the qualification that it has to be a giluach sheyesh bo hashchasa. It needs to be a form of shaving that is destructive. And therefore, even Rabbi Eliezer would concede that scissors are not problematic for Kohanim, Yisraelim, and for Kol Yisrael. That brings us to the Mishnah that ends our discussion on shavers, razors. And again, just a reminder, I am very much in the thicket of looking into the sugya of Lo Yilbash right now, and which was last time we talked about the isser of cross-dressing, but we noted it's not just cross-dressing that's problematic, but it's in general, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Yaakov, I think, I have to look back at the Gemara in Nazir, he says even men putting on cosmetics or women carrying weapons is an issue of Lo Yilbash. So why is that pertain to shaving? Because what's the issue with a man using a razor and taking off his hair? According to some, Rambam says maybe it's because it's Avodah Zara. There's other reasons given. That's what they would do in the pagan practices. But Rabbi Bechai says you are uprooting, literally and figuratively, you're uprooting Maisa Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created men to have beards in order to distinguish them from women, that they are two separate beings. And by you going ahead and eliminating the siman that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, you are basically trying to uproot Maisa Bereishis, what Hashem created. So, as you can imagine, that will play very well into the sugya. I'll give you the outline, basically, of where I am right now. Generally, the Isser of Lo Yilbash, the Rambam, the Chinuch, there's basically two issues. Number one, the Rabbanan says in the Gemara Nazir that if a man dresses up as a woman, or a woman dresses up as a man, it'll lead to a mixture of the sexes, and then that'll lead to promiscuity. That's concern number one, it'll lead to zima. Number two is, again, that's what the pagans did. Pagans would break down the gender norms, and they would come together. We don't want to be like the pagans. But my shiur that I'm putting together, and if I manage to put together something reasonable, maybe I'll write up as an essay, is that I want to make the argument that there's a third reason that there is an intrinsic problem with men acting like women and women acting like men, that Judaism values inherently a sense of masculinity and femininity for their respective genders. And so part of what I want to get to in the sugya is that according to some Rishonim, Kavana matters. According to some Rishonim, Kavana doesn't seem to matter. Meaning, if I wear woman's clothing because it's raining outside and the only thing I have is my wife's coat, many Rishonim say, since you're not wearing it to beautify yourself, you're wearing it to protect yourself for utilitarian practical purposes, it'd be mutter. Once you introduce Kavana into the equation, so then you have to ask yourself, is the reason I don't wear women's clothing because how others perceive me, or because of the effect that, you know, Beino Levein Atzmi or Beino Adam Lamakum? So if Kavana is put into the equation, then there's a subjective element. It sounds more like a Beino Adam Lamakum or Beino Adam LaAtzmo kind of mitzvah, and that shows like there's intrinsic issues. So some would say that even for a person to sit in their own home privately and be cross-dressing is already problematic. So putting all these things together, I'm going to try to make my argument, and hopefully I'll give the shiur during Adar, Adar Sheni if I'm late, Adar Rishon if I get together fast enough. Because
Are you saying that I'm not allowed to identify as a woman?
Ah, so that'll be part of the shiur. Part of what we've discussed is, you know, there is the element of what's called gender dysphoria, that there are people who have this mental health challenge of gender dysphoria, and that's what they do to alleviate it. Without even getting there, I think there's a broader trend, even among people who don't suffer from gender dysphoria, that there's been a broader trend for people to kind of break down gender norms in fashion and clothing and in conduct. So it's we're going to get there, Zadie. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Rest assured. Okay, let's go forward. Okay, so were there any questions on shaving, razors, any stone that was left unturned before we go to the next Mishnah? Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed our discussion on shavers. Again, apologies to the women who are here who don't really care about this particular halakha, but I hope at least it was an edifying experience. Going forward, right, Zadie, is very edifying. Okay. Hakosei kesovas kaga. Now we're going to talk about tattoos. No, okay, this applies to both men and women alike. Hakosei kesovas kaga, someone who gets a tattoo. Kosav lo kakea, kakea lo kosav. So the way it works when you get a tattoo, I don't know how it's done today, but the way at least it was done back then, was you first put the ink out on your arm, wherever you're getting it. You write whatever you want in a tattoo, or you draw whatever you want. And then you take the knife and you insert it into your skin. So both elements are required. Someone who just writes without then inserting it, kakev lo kasav, or you insert it without actually writing anything. You don't have any ink over there. Eino chayv ad sheyichtov v'kakea, not chayv until you write and you insert it, bidyo b'chol b'chol davar shu roshim, either with black ink, blue ink, or some form of ink or something that would leave an impression. Rabbi Shimon Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Shimon Omer, he qualifies this and says, Eino chayev ad sheyito shem Hashem. He says, not just any tattoo would make you chayev, at least d'oraisa, but you'd have to actually write shem Hashem. I'll just translate it literally for now. The Gemara will explain what it is. Literally, the name of God. Shnemar, why? It says, Uksovas kaka lo sitnu b'chem ani Hashem. Because it doesn't just say, don't give yourself a tattoo, but it says, don't give yourself a tattoo, for I am God. So why does it say, for I am God at the end? Seems to be telling us that the tattoo has to do something with God's name. Now, of course, I could just say, why does it say, for I am God? Well, if you look at the Pasuk, in its context of not getting a tattoo, you look in a Vayikra Yates Chaf Ches. It's actually, now you're wondering, what does tattoos have to do with anything we're learning? It's literally right next to the pasuk of not shaving, of not taking off your of not doing impermissible shaving, or what do you call it? Right. So therefore, what are all these different practices? How are they all related? Presumably, they're all idolatrous practices. The pagans would tattoo themselves. They would shave off their payas. They would gouge themselves when someone died. And all these things are right next to each other in the Torah, actually. So the Rambam, Ibn Ezra, many others understand that these are idolatrous practices. Now, other Rishonim give other explanations, that Hashem gave us our bodies and we should keep them clean and pure. Those are completely valid as well. They don't need my haskama. But if we want to understand the broader context here, these seem to all be idolatrous practices. And that's really, and therefore the pasuk would say, Ani Hashem, I am God, as opposed to the other gods, the pagan gods, that people do these deeds in order to worship them. So that's that would just be the more parshanut behind it. Okay, let's jump into the Gemara. We want to now understand the last part of the Mishnah. Last part of the Mishnah gave a qualification that you're only chayav for tattooing yourself under the name of God. You know what it reminds me of? You know, you go to Israel and you see people and they have like a tattoo of something from Tehillim on their arm. And like, oh my God, you're like, you completely missed the point. And, you know, I feel like if somebody really wanted to be a troll, they would actually get this pasuk tattooed onto their arm. That'd be really lahachis. So what does it mean when we say Shem Hashem? You have to write the words Ani Hashem on your arm. That's when you violate the Issur D'oraisa, the biblical prohibition of getting a tattoo. And that's like a very, how many people are like going to tattoo parlors and getting Ani Hashem written on their arm? You know, that's not exactly on top of people's lists. Not that I know many people who go out for tattoo parlors, but my sense is that that's not what they do. Amar le lo chidtani bar kafra. Eino chayv atche yichtov shem avos kochavim. Ah, this makes a, I'm not going to say makes more sense. It resonates a little more. It's when you write the name of a pagan god on your arm as the tattoo. That's when you violate the Isser. Shnemar, tzovas kaka lo sinu v'cham ani Hashem. Ani Hashem v'lo ak. Why say I am God at the end of the pasuk? Not because you violate the Isser when you write the name of God on you, but Ani Hashem, I am God, to the exclusion of other gods who you might be tempted to tattoo their names onto your arm. That's what the pasuk is saying. And that resonates with me at least. I think that fits well. Doesn't need my outcome, of course. Okay, so that's just on the D'oraisa, on the biblical level. But the Rabbanim were afraid that people might come to get tattoos, so they asserted a few things that look like you're getting a tattoo. And this is nothing new. Chacham do this all the time. It's just making a siyag. They're just making a fence around the Torah. Amar Rav Malchiya, Amar Rav Ada Bar Hava, also lo adam sheyitein ofar mikla agave makaso, neshin niras kiksovas kaka. So if someone is making insertions on their skin, you know, you're getting a, you're getting something that's stuck in your skin, you're having it removed. So you're not allowed to use this special kind of ashes called ofar mikla, these burnt ashes, which Rashi says these ones are shekashahi, they are very rough, they're very tough, mikakes makum hamaka, and they're able, when you use it for medicinal purposes, they actually enter deep into your skin. Varoshem nira sham acher zman, and it remains actually in your skin after a significant period of time. So even though you're not deliberately tattooing yourself, it certainly gives the impression of a tattoo. And therefore, they said you should use something else when you're treating a wound. Of course, it's midrabanan. I would imagine someone's in dire straits, they could use it. But that's generally what they advised. excuse me. Amar Nachum Rei D'Rav Ika. Shapur Shvachos. Okay, little introduction. The next part of the Gemara is a little bit of a tangent. Basically, we brought up a fellow named Rav Malchiya with an aleph at the end. However, there's another rabbi named Rav Malchiyo who sounds very similar to the Rav Malchiya. So what the Gemara wants to do now is explain Rav Malchiya and Rav Malchiyo are two separate people who, and you shouldn't be confused and think that they're the same person when you see their names come up throughout the Talmud. So the Gemara is just going to take a moment to explain who ruled on which cases. So regarding these three cases, I'll come back and explain what they are. It's Rav Malchiyo Rav Malchiyo ruled on the halachic cases of a shapud, shvachos, and gumos. We'll come back to what they are. And bloris, afar mikla, ugvina, the case of a bloris, afar mikla, and gvina, Rav Malchiyah. Rav Malchiyah ruled on those three cases. Okay. However, there's an other version. Rav Papa Amar, Masnisa Rav Malchiyah. No. Whenever you see the name come up in a Mishnah or in a Brisa, an earlier Taniyitic statement, it's Rav Malchiyah who's quoting the Mishnah or Brisa. Shmaisisa, but Amoraic statement, Rav Malchiyah. It's Rav Malchiyah who is ruling on those cases. Usimanach, and how do you remember that? He says, Masnisa Malchusa. So Mishnah Malchusa is Rav Malchiyah. That's just a fun way to remember it. Now, what's the difference? You know, it sounds like for the most part, they still line up the same way, whether you go according to Rav Nachman or Rav Papa. So my benayu, iki benayu shvachos. What's the difference when it comes to shvachos? The case of shvachos. What's the case of shvachos? The case of shvachos is that it says in the Mishnah, I believe it's Ksubos. So that if a, let's say you live in the five towns, wherever you are, and you have like 100 servants working in your house for you. And the question is, can your wife go out and just eat brunch all day and hang out with her friends and do nothing else? Or alternatively, I'm just joking and making this up, you could put in Greenwich, whatever location you want, equal opportunity to make fun of everyone. So the question is she allowed to stay? Is she allowed to just go gallivanting around with her day? Or, as it says in the Mishnah, no, she can have over 100 servants in her home, but she's still expected to do certain chores in order to keep busy. So that halacha is in a Mishnah. So that Mishnah, since it's a Mishnah, who would be saying it? Well, according to Rav Nachman, Rav Malchiyah, and according to Rav Papa, since it's a Mishnah, it would be Rav Malchiyah. Okay, so they disagree when it's Rav Malchiyah saying something, it's Rav Malchiyah. And now where does the disagreement come from? I mean, I think in traditions, we lose these details. You think in the Gemara, many times you'll see the girsa changes. They'll say, Rava said this. Oh, really, it's Rava. Or Rava says, really, it's Rava. It's because the hay and the olive could get mixed up in pronunciation. Rava, Rava. We especially think about like an Israeli pronunciation. They always like say, oh, you guys don't pronounce the I am. Like, shkech, you guys don't pronounce a kumutz. You know, you turn a kumutz into a pasach. So an Israeli would probably say, Rava and Rava. It sounds the same. So that's what happens. Okay.
Now, your voice.
Your audio,
sorry?
Something happened with your audio for a second, or I think.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
It sounds like a cartoon thing, you know.
Like a cartoon?
Lahavdo.
I still sound like a cartoon. That's so weird. Let me mute myself. Can you hear me now?
I apologize for my characterization. I was just trying to...
That's all right. That's what it sounds like. It still sounds like that.
Your voice is still messed up.
I wonder how it comes out on the recording. That'd be interesting.
It's okay. We can hear it. We can hear it, though. I mean, go ahead.
You can hear?
We can hear. It's just, and we can hear it clearly. It's not your usual voice, but we can hear it. So go ahead.
This is so weird. I wonder how it's going to come out on the recording, because I hear your voices normally. All right. Melissa says I sound perfectly normal. Thank you, Melissa. Okay. All right. It's moved through this because I imagine it's the pre-bed voices. Is that in here?
Now it got very fuzzy again.
Yeah, let me switch.
Now you're frozen.
Oh, yeah.
We don't hear anything.
Where's the chat box?
I hear your voice slightly. I can't make out what you're saying.
Okay, I hear you. It's not good. I don't know what to do.
Maybe switch to your phone.
Any better? Still nothing. Okay. I apologize. You know, let me type it to the chat. I'll type it to the chat. I will give the rest of the shear and send recording out.
No, maybe. Oh, I was going to say you could switch to your phone, maybe, and it might be okay. If you have your cell phone, you could dial into the. If you have, I don't know if you have Zoom on your cell phone, but
I'm not sure.
Now you sound all of a sudden you sound good. Whoa!
Oh, okay, all right, it resolved. I'm glad
back
that
to normal. Out. All right.
Okay, great. No cartoons either.
No.
Okay. I don't know what happened, but it's working now. So let's jump into it and finish this before it goes wonky again. All right. Thanks for hanging on, guys. Okay, let's go forward. Where are we? So last part over here, Rabbi Bar Abai Kupin, or two lines before the Mishnah. Rabbi Bar Abai Kupin afil arivta dechusilta. He says, and this is the position that we had before, that he was makbid on even doing an insertion with like a little knife and then putting afer miklah over there, putting those ashes on you, is problematic, just like we said earlier from Rav Malchia. However, Rav Ashi disagrees. Kol makoshish sham maka makoso mochiach. He's like, no, we don't need to worry about people thinking that it's a tattoo and therefore tattoos are okay, because people can clearly see that the reason there's this thing that resembles somewhat a tattoo is because he's treating a wound. The wound itself is mochia. The wound itself indicates to me that this wasn't a tattoo, this was a wound, and it was a treated wound. So no one's going to come to confuse us with a tattoo, and therefore that is okay. Great. That brings us to the final Mishnah. And I know some of you might be familiar with this already, so let's go right through it. Remember, a Nazir cannot do three things. A Nazir is someone who cannot drink wine, cannot become tummy mace, cannot become spiritually impure by contact with a dead body, and also has to grow his hair out. He doesn't take haircuts. So you can see the connection there as well. Nazir Shahaya Shosiyayin Kol Hayom Ein Chayev Ela Achas. So remember, in order for someone to get Malchus, one of our angel principles is that you need to be warned beforehand. You need Hasra. If you don't get warned by Edom and say, I'm doing it anyway, you will not get Malchus or capital punishment for it. So, a Nazir Shoshosa Yayin Kol Hayom, Ein Chayev Ela Achas. He only gets warned once, and he's drinking wine all day. He'll only get one set of Malchus because he was warned once. However, Amrulof, they tell him each time, Al Tishta, each time he's about to take another swig of wine, they say, don't drink, otherwise you'll be chayav. He's like, I don't care, I'm drinking. Then, v'shosa chayav akol achas v'achas. Then, he's chayav each and every time he gets warned and drinks anyway. Likewise, if he's just frolicking through the cemetery and he's becoming tamei meis all day, he would generally only be chayev once. However, up to tamei, they keep warning him, don't become tamei meis, don't come in contact with a dead body. And nonetheless, he does it each and every time. Once again, chayev each and every time for each and every one. You see a theme here, right? Same thing here. If he shaves himself, he gets a haircut all day. That's a very long haircut. Generally, he would only be chayev once. He was born once. However, don't shave. He's chayev each and every time he's warned and does it anyway. Then, another case, not of a nazir, it could just be of anybody, a similar principle. If someone's wearing klai, wearing shatnez all day, cool and linen together, you're only chayev once. Al tilvash. But they keep telling you, don't wear shatnez. Now, catch this detail over here. And he takes it off and puts it back on each time. He's chayev each and every time. Now, why does he need to take the shirt off and put it back on? Because you have to do a maisa. You remember, in order to get malchus, to get lashes, you have to do an action to incur malchus. You have to do an action to have an action done to you. So if he's just passively wearing shatnez all day, he'd only be chayev once. But since he keeps putting it on again and again, and it's worn each and every time before he puts it back on, therefore he is liable each and every time. Finally, the end of the Mishnah. And this is a good example of where in the Mishnah, this is a separate Mishnah, but it gets chunked together over here. Here's a fun question. It's too bad Henry had to go, but I know this is one of his favorite cases. So, Yesh Chorshem Achad V'chayev L'Mishum Shmon Alavim. I have a case where someone could be plowing through a field. A person could be plowing through a field and violate eight Lavin, eight prohibitions at the same time. Hachorish B'shur V'chamor. A, he's plowing with an ox and a donkey together. The hay mukdashin, and these animals were consecrated to Hekdesh. Uklayim, and he is putting klayim in. He's putting wheat and barley together. Uklayim bekarim, or with grape seed. Ubashtias, it's during the sabbatical year. The yom tov, and it's a yom tov. We'll just say it's like sukkis. The kohen, and he's a kohen. The nazir, and he's a nazir bebeis hatumah. And there's graves over there, and so he's becoming tamei. So you have eight different isurim all in one action. Wow, that's quite something, right? Kanani mechanichai omer afalobish klaim. He says, "Hey, I could add on a ninth. If you're wearing shatnez, also you should. That'd be a ninth isur you violate. Why don't we add that to the equation?" Amarlo eno hashem. The rabbi said, "Well, it's not relevant. Like you could do the same thing without it being klaim." You wearing klayim isn't relevant to the deed of plowing a field. We're trying to find isurim that are inherently connected to plowing the field. Well, Amarlehem, avanazir lo huashim. If that's your logic for excluding someone wearing klayim from this equation, from this fun academic exercise, then what does a guy being a nazir have to do with the action of plowing a field? He just happens to be a nazir. There's nothing inherently connecting the fact he's a nazir to the deed of plowing the field. You know, plowing is usar in Yom Tov, plowing is usar during Shvias. You know, what seems like an arbitrary line that you're drawing. So God willing, we will elaborate on this next time. But that brings us to the end of our learning for today. So thank you all for joining. And God willing, I'm going to be sending out an email. Please check your emails. In less than 2 months, less than 8 weeks, God willing, we'll be finishing this Masechta. I want to make a CM, so I'm going to send out a survey to just see when people are available for a CM, who might be interested in helping organize it, anyone who might be interested in sponsoring or co-sponsoring. That way we can mark this occasion, a significant occasion, in the way that we and the learning, the Torah, deserves. So have a wonderful night, and please keep your eye out for that email. Have a great Shabbos, everybody.
Good Shabbos.
Thank you.